So, Danny, it was just brought to my attention that you didn't just interview Kurt Busch today.
Oh, no.
You also interviewed a guy named Stingray Rob.
I was going to keep that reveal for later, but yes, Darius handed me the sheet of paper, and I said, okay, this is clearly... Like, remember, you weren't here, but the D.C. Defenders, after they won the championship a couple years ago, whenever that was, came into studio, and they did, like, some sort of weird social media prank thing where they, like, had to mention weird stuff, and, like, everyone's like, oh, Danny, you got. I'm like, I don't know that I did exactly, but whatever, it's fine. Like, Jordan Tamu had to, like, talk about bowling, and then one of the other guys had to say, like, tuna fish or something. It totally unfunny, totally stupid, but, again, they were very proud of it. But anyway, the point is, I thought it was something like that, where there's some sort of social media thing and a prank, and the guys are like, no, that's not real. Very real, and the story's actually kind of cool. We get to that in the interview, but I kind of did a triple take, I would say, when Darius handed me the info sheet.
I couldn't believe that. So some of the names in NASCAR, as you'd imagine, are wild. It's not quite like 1920s baseball reference, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Like, there is a pit crew chief who's very successful named Booty Baker.
Okay.
And it's just like, everyone just calls him Booty, and they're like, Booty Baker did a great job today. Coming off four, he made the decision to go get tires. And, like, Larry McReynolds is the America's crew chief, and he's just constantly talking about Booty Baker. And there's so many guys. They're all named Booty Baker.
They're all named Booty.
Like, not all of them, literally, but there is a guy named Booty Baker who's silly, and he's like a crew chief. Anyway, I'm not saying I'm shocked that there's a guy named, what was his name? Not Broccoli Rob.
Stingray Rob.
Stingray Rob. But, I mean, that's a great name.
Yeah.
Like, how come I can't be Stingray Rob?
Like,
you know?
Now, if you told me Rob Stingray, I'd go, oh, like, all one word. All right, interesting. That's fine. Rob is his last name. I think that's the slept on part.
R-O-B-B.
Yeah.
But Stingray is his name.
Yes.
And you asked him about that.
I did.
Okay.
Now, I felt like a, because, again, they're on media tours. They're doing, like, their sit-downs with different outlets and different things, and they got a lot of these to do. So I learned this kind of from by watching, like, the, you know, our guy Kevin McCarthy, his videos, right, where he would interview these dudes in these press junkets, and they're doing 77,000 of them to promote whatever movie or whatever it is, and Kevin does a great job of trying to, like, stand out and ask them different questions than everybody else does for the local news or whatever. And so I'm going, I guarantee every schlub's been like, now Stingray's a pretty crazy name. How did that happen? So I didn't want to do that out of the gate.
So tired.
And
yeah.
So we got going a little bit, and then he sort of referenced it. And I said, okay, you know, I got to ask, like, how did that come about? And it's actually a really neat story, and I'll, you know, save it for when we air that in the 6 o'clock hour. But
I'm sure it's the first time he's told this
story. Yeah, he's probably never had to say it before.
Well, all-time NASCAR name. So I just Googled. Like, funny NASCAR names. Dick Trickle's the first one that comes up.
Of course, right away.
Everyone knows Dick Trickle, the most famous NASCAR driving name ever. Then you've got Stingray Rob is the number two name that comes up. Open wheel and sports car racer, whose first name sounds like an aquatic animal. Yep, I would say that it sounds a lot like an aquatic animal, as it is one.
Qualifies. Yep.
Then there's a guy named Fireball Roberts. I've heard of him. Icon in the 50s and 60s. You remember
Seriously?
Fireball?
I do not.
But there's just guys like that. Like, everyone's Bubba and Booty, and I don't know, man. But anyway, I can't wait to hear the interview coming up at 6 o'clock right here on The Fan. And if you missed Antonio Williams, the Commanders wide receiver, the rookie from Clemson, you'll hear that before we get out of here at the end of the show as well. But right now we're talking C.J. Abrams. Paul Taboni was on with the Junkies today discussing the move from shortstop to second base. So he didn't necessarily comment on why now. He just said it's been a couple-week process. Why do you think they did it right now? What does your gut tell you?
So I think it's a, hey, we're out of it. And if this means that Abrams isn't, you know, as locked in and isn't as prolific as he's been offensively for a little bit, we still have enough deposits in the bank this year because he's sustained it for long enough, being one of the best offensive players in the sport. Even if his numbers over the last month and change aren't as good, he's still had this unbelievable offensive season. We're going to get a king's ransom when we trade him this winter. And we don't care about making him happy anymore. That's my view.
It's a good answer. It's as good an answer as I've heard. So you're saying as soon as they were eliminated, this was always the plan?
I don't know about always, but in other words, if they're going, what triggers have to be hit for us to be in the trading C.J. Abrams business, okay, this coming offseason? He has a great offensive season. Check. We're out of it. or you know, or whatever. Like let me kind of back up there. Like if we are, you know, 10 games over 500 leading the wild card at this point, and you know, I don't think the trade deadline would have gone the way that it did, but once they've kind of crossed the okay, no matter what happens the last month, he's had a great year. We're not in the business of giving out long-term contracts to anybody, let alone with this lockout looming, et cetera. We are, you know, operating the dollar store, even that on a budget. He's going to be traded. We're going to get a King's ransom back. And we now don't have to worry about our standing in the standings. Once that happens, you know, we're fine. And, yeah, we don't care if we make him a little bit mad. Because if you're five games over, if you're playing great, and then you make the switch during meaningful baseball time, you risk, you know, I don't say losing him, but having him go through a spell or a swoon. And you can't afford that if you're trying to, you know, stack every W. Now that you don't feel the need to do that, I think they're able to pull the trigger.
Yeah. I'll say this. I really do appreciate the stones of this front office to do the right thing right now. It's hard to do. I mean, he's having an incredible year. They're talking about him every couple days on MLB Network as the new superstar. The numbers from the shortstop position don't happen in this era, really. He's going to end up close to 40 home runs with maybe the major league total as the leader in runs batted in. And he's going to steal 30 bases in the process. Like, it's a 35-homer, 30-steal season where he's going to hit maybe, he's hitting 280, but let's say around 280 with an OPS close to 900. I mean, it's a monster season. This, you can make the case, is one of the better years ever turned in by a middle infielder for the Nationals. Probably the best season, I guess, if you're just making a shortstop, second base, middle infield. Best year ever turned in, but for a Nats infielder, you've had Ryan Zimmerman, you've had Anthony Rendon, you've had some massive campaigns. This is probably the best that you've gotten. And it's from a 25-year-old coming into his own, who's put it all together, and here you are with 6 weeks left in the season going, hey, CJ, come to my office. And he's thinking it's another high five about how great he is.
I won player this month, right? Or this week. Yeah.
How was the All-Star performance? Or what'd you think of being in Philly and representing the Nationals and getting to start in the game was a pretty cool accomplishment. And, you know, you go through all the different things. Nah, man, we're moving you to second base. And he's like, I'm sorry, what? It's the right baseball move.
Yeah.
But in the same way that when they sent Dylan Cruz down, you go, wow, that took some balls. Yes. You've known this guy for 3 hours, and you're sending him to the minors? Okay, no problem. Go for it.
Yeah.
With C.J. Abrams, same thing. It's like in this season, the way he's putting it together offensively, in the middle of August and kind of a stretch run now where nothing matters, you're going to move him to second? I dig it. But that takes some stones from this group.
They've shown it. I mean, they've made these kinds of, I mean, Cruz and this one, I think, are the two biggest, certainly. And then, you know, keeping down Cruz unceremoniously until, you know, you accrue an extra year of service time on the back end. Again, that you guys notice those sorts of things. They notice every time they call up a reliever to go multiple innings and get his you-know-what kicked in and then send him back down right away, you know, wearing out those frequent flyer miles up to Rochester. Players don't love that, but for somehow, some way, they've kept the train on the tracks when it comes to those things. And landing the plane on that, I think, is actually a real credit to this organization as to how good they've been in that regard, that they've been able to do that. This is the big, I would say, what am I looking for here? This is sort of the biggest pill to swallow for players, I think, probably. But I think everybody in that clubhouse knows, probably, whether you like it or not, yes, he's a leader. Yes, he's having this incredible season. But everybody knows that Nunez is the better shortstop. And anybody that's been around baseball for 17 seconds could tell you the wunderkind, who is an unbelievable glove, is the best shortstop right now on their major league roster. So him playing shortstop's not crazy.
Nunez is an elite defender, period. Like, he's not just the best shortstop on their roster. He's one of the better shortstops defensively, probably in the sport. He's a 70 defender and a 70 runner. That's the thing. When everyone's kind of beaten up on him because he's one of the statistically worst offensive players in baseball in terms of OPS, it's very Jacob Young from the last couple of years, where you rank like 200-some ranked qualifying big league hitters, and Jacob Young was like second to last in OPS while being this platinum glove center fielder, and you go, can you justify this? It's the same conversation now with Nassim Nunez. Young got to a point where he's going to hit 12 to 13 home runs this year, and he's a major league average offensive player in terms of OPS and stuff. Nassim Nunez is now the new Jacob Young, where it's like, man, it's really hard to play this guy every day when he's got an OPS that starts with a 5. But it's at such a premium defensive position. If you want to be an excellent defensive ball club, which, if we're being honest, is the opposite of what the Nationals have been,
not just
this year, but for several years. Like, you can't be a really good defensive team and have C.J. Abrams at shortstop. Can't happen. You can be a really good defensive team and possibly have him at second, because he's going to be fine at second. It's an easier position to play. It's an easier throw to make. You heard Paul Toboni say he thinks the throw is the issue. In fact, play that clip, Darris. I found that interesting. I want you to react to this too, Danny. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you think of a C.J. Abrams era. There's plenty of throws in there of the 19 that you can choose from this year. There's also a lot of just routine ground balls that he boots. But it seems like Toboni's staff feels better about the range and the ability to get to balls, which he has that in spades. But the fielding part, less problematic to them than the arm.
First of all, I'll say, like, he has made strides, but I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, a lot of it is throwing, and CJ's so darn athletic. He gets to balls out the outer edges of his range.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about syncing up his top and bottom half and delivering throws on target. And so, we think that playing second base will ease that burden for him. But at the same time, a piece of this is like, you know, you guys have seen Nas play the infield, being able to, and you saw it last night, like being able to play him at shortstop and, with CJ at time, let's say whenever it ends up being the next week, the combination of those two guys, those two positions, I think will lead us to a better position than how we're currently constructed.
I agree that he'll be a better second baseman. It's easier, and the throw will be much easier, so he'll have fewer errors there. But this is not just an arm problem at short. I mean, there's a lot of balls he just doesn't cleanly field.
Yeah, so it's a combination of things. The throwing part of it, it's when people hear that, they go, wait, his arm is bad? What does that mean? He has lazy feet. And now you're going to hear that and you go, are you calling him lazy? No. This is just sort of a baseball expression. He doesn't do a good job consistently, especially on some of those routine plays, those room service, two hoppers, of having his feet set in the right way, underneath them, balanced, et cetera, to be able to put an 80% throw together where you're going to get a runner by five steps who's Cadillacing it down to first. He misses those way too often for someone that's playing at that level, right? And that's a thing that even if you aren't doing things fundamentally correct at second base, to your point, it's just an easier throw. It's shorter. There's more where you're headed towards first. Whereas at shortstop, you got to create your own momentum a lot of times by taking great angles on balls. You could just watch those guys take ground balls before a game. You can watch some of the different plays, and you try to think back to ones that Abrams made or that Nunez made, etc. Nunez has outstanding, world-class, top-of-the-line feet, and that's where all of it starts. So, yeah, maybe Nunez is a bit of a stronger arm. It's not as if Abrams is devoid of arm strength. It's not about that. It's about the excellence of getting your feet underneath you as part of the ground ball fielding operation that Abrams, frankly, has struggled with. And that's where his errors come from, and that's where both his fielding errors and his throwing errors come from, are those things. And, Toboni's, I think, being very kind, saying he's made strides. Respectfully, no, he hasn't. Like, you know what I mean? I would take issue with that. I don't think he has, and I don't know how much of a priority it was for him to do that.
Yeah, I would also – I think everything you said is true. I also think Nunez has a much stronger arm than C.J. Abrams. And Abrams has an average to tick above average big league arm. Like, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But in the same way, when you were watching Curtis Meade play out of position at third base for a while, and he would, like, purposefully one-hop the ball over there from deep behind the bag or whatever, he'd kind of make a long throw and not a lot of juice on it. When Nunez is at short, it is visibly different. It
yes.
looks like Kali Akmanis throwing a ball in an out route, and then Jaden Daniels ripping one in there or something like that. Based on Savant, which is not always the best metric, but it measures like velocity and average throw or whatever. Arm strength, C.J. Abrams is actually below big league average at around 42nd percentile, I think, last I looked. Nunez is close to 60th percentile. So just an indication. But the point is the point, which is they're going with a really good defensive shortstop for the rest of this season, which will help some of these young arms. You're going to get more outs. You're going to help your staff. That's a good thing. I do wonder, I'm not expecting them to spend money because that would be just crazy.
On what? Players?
That would be so funny if they spent money on a player. Dude, wait. I got one. Wait.
Stop it.
Hold on it. I got one. They sign a player for money. It takes Oh, my God.
No. I was actually thinking of this joke.
Yeah.
Double-digit millions of dollars for a major league caliber baseball player.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Danny.
I know.
Oh, you're back in the comedy game.
I know.
I actually just thought of one. The Learners call Paul Toboni up.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, we want this guy. We're going to stroke the check. Come on. Who's funny?
Who's funny?
We're just funny.
We're just fun in the back.
We're just having a good old time here. But anyway, free agent shortstops for this year. J.P. Crawford, 31 years old. Ha-Sung Kim, 30 years old. Mauricio Dubon, I mean, that could be the kind of guy they go with, honestly. But, like, I wonder if they sign one of these dudes to either be their starter. Like, could you bring in a Taylor Wall stinks. There's not really good options here. I'll be very honest with you.
You're not into Orlando Arcia?
Not so much. Like, could they sign nubby J.P. Crawford or Ha-Sung Kim or, you know, IKF, like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or some jag like that to be their shortstop next year? Or do you just – I mean, are you really going to roll Nassim Nunez out there in the middle infield as your shortstop, your captain, so to speak, for a $1.57 after he posts a 585 OPS? That's a tough sell.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a lot easier to do that at second. Like, you can talk me into – and I love defense and I love Nas more than most people. Give me elite glove and 50 steals, and that's a baseball player that'll have a spot on my team. But you could talk me into a 590 OPS at second. It's a lot harder to do that at short. And maybe they'd say, well, what's the difference if CJ's at second? You got the same thing. CJ might not be at second. Maybe that's what happens. Maybe you get your shortstop who's in AA or AAA, who's a little closer. You know, and that player takes over by the end of next year. Because the long-term solution here is Eli Willett's last year's number one pick. But he's not going to be in the big leagues next season. He's 2 years away.
Yeah, is it Seaver King's job after a September call-up? And maybe he shows and he competes at spring training with one of these veterans for $11? Maybe that's
maybe
the plan.
The combination of Seaver King and Nassim Nunez is kind of the play there?
If I had to guess. Or the player haul they get when they trade C.J. Abrams. Because I think that's coming. I think that's the second phase of this.
Yeah, which we talked a little bit about yesterday. We'll certainly get back into in the days ahead. Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Commanders have a dress rehearsal Saturday against the Detroit Lions. But are they going to have anybody act in their dress rehearsal? Or will the curtains just open and we're going to be sitting there looking at a stage that's empty? That's next on the Fan. Grant and Danny on the Fan. You just heard the injury update from out here in Ashburn via Toby in the update. The names starting to pile up on the Commanders. The big one is Johnny Newton. We haven't talked much about the fact that he's got this pec. That sounds bad, by the way. When you get sent to a specialist in New York away from the team, I'm not going to sit here and announce his season over, but that's a significant part of the season at minimum, if not the entire year. So you're talking about a major injury for Johnny Newton that will last into the year. So that's now two, one on each side of the ball. Laremy Tunsil, your left tackle, way more importantly. And then Johnny Newton, who's a depth defensive tackle, but a guy that was a second-round pick in what was going to be a really critical, got to have it, like make or break, where are you, third season in the NFL. And he might miss the majority, if not all, of this season.
That is a bummer. Now, that's nowhere near as costly, respectfully, to him, and I'm not trying to knock it, as Tunsil. That's the number one dark cloud hanging over the organization right now, to be honest with you, even still to this day. And, there's somebody that played at a good enough level that's going to take that spot in Coleman, but still, it ain't Tunsil. It ain't the guy that you gave up everything for, that's got the highest AAV at the position in the sport, one that is now among the two or three most premium positions in football, that left tackle spot or the blind side protector spot, quarterback one, guys that rush the passer, two, catch the passes, three, and 3A is that left tackle spot. And he's the highest paid among those because he's excellent. Newton to me was going to be part of a rotation, kind of the occasional, NASCAR sub package or, part of the undersized group that was going to try to get after you on third and seven. So it's not good that he's not available potentially for a long time, but it's not as devastating certainly as Tunsil.
Yeah, I think on a 1 to 10, Tunsil's a 10, Newton's probably more of a, I don't know, if he misses two or three games, that's like a 3. If he misses the whole year, I think that's closer to a 6 or a 7 still. Because, this is an important pass-rushing defensive tackle, and depth is the name of the game, right?
Yes, so it is, especially there, yeah.
Right now, Tim Settle's not practicing. Now, he's going to be ready for week one. I think Quinn said today they're hoping that he'll actually be able to practice next week. But Tim Settle was brought in to be the run stuffer in tandem, almost platooning kind of on running downs with what Johnny Newton does on passing downs. So, like, neither of those guys is there. And it's the first team nose tackle yesterday was Shy Tuttle. Would you recognize him if he was sitting on your lap?
I would not.
I'm not telling you he can't play. I know they're high on him and they like him. But all of a sudden, that's pretty important because when they're in their base, that 34 defense, they've got Javon Kinlaw basically is like a five tech rushing against tackles and tight ends, and they got Payne out wide doing the same thing, pushing the pocket a little bit. So they need one of those girthy, you know, big smart cars in the middle. That's where I think someone like Newton's going to rush from. It's where Settle's going to be for sure. That's why they paid him the $7-8 million that they're going to pay him per year APY. And maybe that opens the door for, like, Byron Coward, who had the great preseason game. I mentioned Ricky Barber earlier today. I thought he was really good against the Dolphins in the first half, one of their standouts. But, yeah, it's a bummer. Those are the only two injuries right now that are definitively going to last into the season. It sounds like the next most serious one, just based on what Quinn has already said on record, would be McNichols, who's still weeks, not days away, like a couple weeks away. I'm sure they still hope that he could be ready for the start of the year, but he's right now squarely on the bubble and kind of fighting for a roster spot with some of the young running backs anyway. But it's more banged up, nicked up, you know, just guys that are not feeling 100% healthy than a bunch of players that are injured or hurt, so to speak. But if it does affect what you're planning to do against the Detroit Lions, which is how this is trending, where it now sounds like maybe Daniels and a lot of the starters don't go because, you know, they can't afford to play some of these guys with so many injuries, then it doesn't really matter if they're back by week one. It's still ruining your process. I mean, it's still, there's a reason you wanted to do A, and you're not getting to do A, you're doing B. That tells me it's the second best plan. It's worse than the A plan, and the injuries are keeping you from doing the A plan. So, ipso facto, that's not ideal.
Yeah, I mean, and Warren Sharp just tweeted this. It's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but Rashad White has missed the last couple days of practice after he did an ice bucket challenge and slipped and looked kind of awkward getting up. Is that something? I mean, the point is it doesn't seem to be all going according to the plan. Part of that is the NFL, and I think you said it, depth is the name of the game, and you have to build for that. But, you know, it's one of those things. And I saw a rumor that did Allegretti leave practice early today as well. Is that something going to happen? And that one's another depth spot.
See,
that's super
important. We'll get details tomorrow. It didn't sound like anything, but I think he did go get some treatment at some point. I saw John Keim tweet about that. A couple other people saw him kind of just go into the tent. But that could be literally any. You could go get taped up.
Get retaped. You could. Yeah.
We could also find out it's something else, but we won't find out till tomorrow.
Yeah, given that he's missed time, that's the only reason my radar is up there, especially at that spot. You know, as we're talking about Daniels playing related to Saturday, you know, can you not afford to have Julian Good-Jones snap the ball to Jaden Daniels at all? What's the deal with that? But yeah, I mean, you're right. This is, you know, and here we are, I would say from my perspective, calling for more intensity, just trying to ramp things up. But yeah, there's also, this is the other side of that. This is the pushback that the org or Dan Quinn or whoever could tell you is, yeah, but look, guys are banged up. Guys are missing days. Guys are hurt, injured, going to see specialists. So it's not all, you know, happening in a vacuum. I'm kind of going, I get that, but last year was so terrible, I would just do the opposite.
Grant and Danny on the Fan brings us to the possibility of the dress rehearsal against the Lions and where we started the show today discussing Jaden Daniels. Wouldn't it be nice if we were just surprised and we found out via presser tomorrow, Quinn comes out and says starters go for a quarter, Daniels is going to be on the field? We're all seemingly thinking similarly. It feels like everyone in town is now saying Daniels is probably not going to go because of all the reps he got with the second team the last 2 days and because of all the guys that are banged up. But what if they zigged when everyone's zagging here and he actually got extra practice reps and then he plays in the game? That would feel like a departure from last year.
It would.
And a pretty big win in terms of the crowd that wants to see them push the gas pedal down a little bit.
Yeah, I think that would be the paradigm shift. That would demonstrate something. Even though I'll still never get those off days back, the three or four of them, whatever it was, after they played a preseason game in which nobody really played, except for a couple guys that are part of the rotation. I'll never get those back, but at least it would demonstrate some urgency. That's the word that I want to experience and see oozing off of this club heading into this regular season. Urgency, understanding that you cannot afford to get off to a rough start, even though the whole league is set, or this schedule is set up for you to get off to a rough start. It is not a crazy scenario. They could be 0-3. That's not out of the realm of possibility. It's very reasonable, in fact. They'll be underdogs in all three games. if it's to be believed that Dallas is legit, Philadelphia, of course, is still Philadelphia. Maybe, you know, week one you can get a fluky result. But and then the defending champs come to town. I mean, this is not a great setup for them to get off to a rip-roaring start. So I'd like to match that urgency of finding a way to tread water there at least through the first handful of weeks.
I could be loud wrong on this, but I do think playing the Eagles in week one is going to be a blessing. Now, maybe I say blessing and you probably lose the game, but I'm just saying playing them in week one instead of week nine.
That makes sense.
For the first time.
It does.
The marriage of Mannion and Hurts could end up being fine. It's not going to be great hitting the ground sprinting, in my opinion. I don't know if you heard today. He threw three picks and looked apparently pretty rough in their joint work with the Patriots. I know that's a damn good team. They made the Commanders look bad last year before we knew that they were good, but that's a strong defense. But three interceptions in practice today, and I know it's practice, who cares. But I just think that there's a transition happening offensively, and it seems like Hurts operating under center, making some of the throws. They're doing the same kind of thing that Washington's doing here with Blau, and Daniels is a way better fit for it for me. I've seen it with my own eyes, but mm-hmm. In Hurts' case, I'm not watching the practices. But I've watched him for years throwing outside the numbers toward the sideline. Like, he just doesn't like throwing to the middle of the field. When Jaden came out, one of the things that a lot of us talked about from his college tape was he does not throw to the middle of the field much, which is now years later been confused for he can't throw to the middle of the field. I don't know that many people were saying that as much as he hadn't done it. Hurts, it feels a little bit more like because of his size, because of his vision over the line, it's not something he's, I don't want to say capable of, but he's going to be good at. Like Daniels has proven, I can do that. I can layer throws. I can put touch on the ball. I wonder about Hurts in that way. Apparently, it was a struggle today against the Patriots.
Totally fair to wonder. My counter is why I agree with actually everything you've said in terms of your analysis of he and Mannion and how long that might take and that marriage, et cetera. You know, you're still a pretty well-built roster with an excellent offensive line.
Definitely.
Barkley hasn't, like, you know, forgotten how to tie his shoes, and they've gotten off to great starts. There's only one September, I think, over the last handful of years of Sirianni where they've been anything other than 4-0. They've mastered whatever it is. Hey, I think you have a lot of talent. You're really well built. But they have gotten off to these really, really good starts. It's been second halves where they faltered in the years that they faltered. And I put falter in quotes. They still win 11 games when it's a quote-unquote bad year. When it's a good year, they win 14 and don't falter at all. But there's enough track record there. But I think your point's well seen. I mean, to me, the thing that I'm counting on or hoping for, and this is not a strategy, by the way, is, well, weird stuff happens in week one and I shrug my shoulders. You know, like somebody that's really good loses to a team that's really bad. Happens every week. What was it? Didn't the Patriots last year like lose to the Raiders to start the season? I mean, weird BS happens in week one. That's kind of my best shot here.
The Bengals every year?
Yes. The Bengals always.
That's been one, maybe not last year, but like the 3 years before that was definitely a thing.
Yeah, they lost to those Patriots who were terrible a couple years ago.
Don't get me wrong, the Eagles should be favored, especially their defensive front against Washington's offensive line is the biggest like mismatch of the matchup, so to speak, of the entire game. So I would imagine their defense will do a nice job getting to Jaden Daniels and putting pressure on him. And I don't think Washington's hanging 40 in that first game necessarily. But I guess my point is, I just think it'll be a good chance for this defense to start quick. They'll be in that game probably in a way maybe that people don't anticipate. In that practice, the Patriots, the Eagles today, A.J. Brown was going toe-to-toe with the team that he was at odds with in Philly all of last year with the Eagles. You'll hear from him as we go around the NFL next on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny until 6:30 tonight on The Fan. Coming up at the top of the hour, you'll hear a conversation with Kurt Busch, who's going to be taking part in the festivities surrounding the Grand Prix 250 in D.C., Indy Racing coming to the DMV for the first time ever on the streets of D.C. Also, if you missed our interview with rookie wide receiver Antonio Williams earlier today, you'll get that as well before we get out of here. Toby's coming up with overtime at 6:30, and then the Nats at 8:05 tonight right here on The Fan. I saw a story that we had to get to. This is from a football coach named Ross Garner. This is one of the funniest tweets I've ever read, actually. He says, "Our linemen have started making PB&Js with a honey bun in the middle. This morning, they made me one, which is a sign of respect and admiration in their culture. It is electric." So the picture is a half-eaten PB&J sandwich, bread on either side, peanut butter, jelly in the middle, and a smashed-in honey bun, like the kind you would get at a gas station in the little plastic and heat up for 10 seconds or in a vending machine. But it's the bread is like pushed down a little bit so that you crunch the honey bun almost thin.
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing idea. Can you imagine how good that must be with the richness and the sweetness of that honey bun with the PB&J and the bread?
Matt,
what?
I didn't invent it. I mean,
what
that's
a win.
Incredible. So the honey bun was a staple at old Sam's Bar at the St. Almond School for Boys, Northwest Washington, D.C. Because when you didn't eat lunch until 1:30 p.m. on most academic school days, you're sitting there starving as like a teenager by like 9:15, right? So whatever, free period, you go down to like the snack bar or whatever. And the best value on the board was the honey bun for 75 cents. So if you had $1.25 total or $1.50, you got a honey bun and a Coca-Cola Classic and you were out of there without any real change. Now, of course, times have changed and that's more sugar than a human being should eat in a month. But even still, that was the play. I have consumed millions and millions of honey buns.
I mean, when you're a kid, you can eat those and drink the soda and nothing happens and nothing matters.
Uh-huh.
It's just, what's the difference?
I'm paying for it now, but at the time,
exactly.
Silly metabolism.
My mother-in-law hates those honey buns, hates them.
Hates?
And finds it repulsive that I would ever want one or have eaten one or that I think they're delicious or, I don't think I've had one as an adult. More than five times, probably, but like if you're on a road trip and you go into a gas station, and you're like, what should I get? The idea that I would just eat a honey bun is delicious.
Yeah, if I see it, I'm getting it.
She thinks that's just absolutely repulsive. And so we have this bit where she talks about how terrible they are and whatever. And I always bring her, like on Christmas, I get her a honey bun. Like that, I just bring it and hand it to her. And it's like in plastic. She's never eaten them. She would never eat them.
Wouldn't dream of it.
Yeah, they're like on the counter and someone else will eat it a day or two later, but. It's just kind of a thing between us now. But I also thought in the tweet, this coach, Garner, he says, a sign of respect and admiration in their culture that they gave him one of their sandwiches is so funny to say about an offensive line group.
It's really good.
I just think that's hilarious.
It's very well done.
All right, let's spin around the NFL with some of the news and notes from the day's activity. The Patriots apparently got the better of the Eagles today in a joint practice. A.J. Brown. Practicing for New England against his former team and was talking after the fact about his time with the Eagles.
Closure? No, it's not about no closure or anything, man. It's love. I won a Super Bowl ring with them. And it's always be love, no matter how anyone feels. I love Philly, and I will always love Philly. But I'm here now, and that's where my feet are, and that's what I'm focused on.
Have you talked to Jones?
No.
Agent, how did you leave things with him?
Philly, man, y'all tough, man. Man, it's love. But listen, I honestly, guys, none of that stuff even matters. Yeah, I think you all should want to report something positive. You know, asking the question is going to turn negative. So let's not get into that. And let's keep everything positive. It's love my way, and just move forward.
I guess. I mean, a lot of negativity and damaging, floated anger and frustrations. And now I guess everybody moves on and you don't get to ask about last year. But
yeah, it's a brilliant strategy.
Right.
You do it through a smile. If I'm on
charming,
record or behind the scenes saying, man, I can't stand Strober and that Darris. Don't get me started on Grant. And then I go to a new show and they're like, can you tell us about the old thing? You guys want to dig that stuff up? You guys are tough, man. No, I'm here now. I love everybody. Nothing but love. And it's like, you weren't before, though.
So are you like,
sure? Just acknowledge it.
You sure it's like, all love?
You can acknowledge it. Acknowledge it. Just acknowledge it.
I love. So much love. Lions tight end Sam Laporta did not practice on Wednesday. Undisclosed injury. I'm imagining this is pretty close to a nothing burger here, but he has had a bunch of days where they've been spelling him, so it makes you feel like something could be afoot. That's an important player. I'm high on Detroit again going into the year. I think they were a little bit – it was too hot, so to speak. Like, think about the movie where you're trying to rob the bank. Mm-hmm. There was too much noise. There was too much heat. Going into last season, it felt like they were the balloon was going to pop a little bit. But everybody's off them now. So I'm kind of back on Detroit as a wild card hopeful playoff team again.
I am with you on that. I mean, this is a group that – it was disappointing last year – that they finished 9-8. I mean, think about that, where they came from, right, and how they got to that point. Coming off 12-5, 15-2 seasons. Bit of a reshuffling. Some of the old guard isn't there anymore, but they've kind of replenished and replaced a little bit. The offense is still going to hum. You know that even without Ben Johnson, this was still the fourth best scoring offense in the sport. It's a matter of if they can do anything positive defensively, and the answer last year was a resounding no.
Here's a good one. Trevon Diggs, the brother of Stephon Diggs, signed with the Seattle Seahawks. Who do the Washington Commanders play in Week 3? The Seattle Seahawks. Who plays for the Washington Commanders? Stephon Diggs. So, believe it or not, for the first time in their NFL career, assuming both are healthy in Week 3, first game at home for the Commanders, Northwest Stadium this year, Stephon versus Trevon, brother versus brother, the Diggs boys playing in a regular season game against each other. Based on a Google search, that has never happened before. That
I
seems
can't
crazy
believe that.
To me.
That's never happened.
Right?
How
They've been
that?
In the league forever.
This is going to be a terrible question. How has that never happened?
So I'm assuming part of it is Diggs played in the AFC with the Bills, obviously. Trevon Diggs was in Dallas, so you get fewer matchups for part of that time. Obviously, he was in Minnesota early in his career, but that was prior to that. Then he played for the Texans. The other thing is Trevon Diggs has had injury problems. And then Stephon Diggs had the ACL, so maybe there might have been games where they could have played and somebody was inactive. But, yeah, based on – now, AI could be misleading all of us. It's going to take over the world and ruin everything. But I was told by the computer machine man that they have never played against each other in the regular season. And the cool part is this is not like Chris Paul and his brother Patrick Paul, you know, the offensive lineman for Washington and Miami that were just playing in the joint practice. This is wide receiver and DB. This is wide out cornerback that are potentially going head-to-head out wide on plays. Like, that's really cool.
So they should have matched up in 2023, but that was when Trevon had had his ACL injury. And then they would have matched up in 2024, but that is when Stephon had his ACL injury for the Texans.
Boom goes the dynamite.
There you go.
So, yeah, and a lot of AFC time since the Vikings, obviously, for Stephon Diggs makes it tougher. Now, in the same division, you're obviously going to have played at this point. But there's your trip around the NFL, little Commanders flavor to end it there on Grant and Danny. Next, you're going to hear from Kurt Busch, one of the most decorated drivers in the NASCAR series over the last decade plus, and Antonio Williams, rookie wide receiver from Clemson, who had his first catch and first preseason action this week against the Dolphins. Grant and Danny taking you up to 6:30 on The Fan.